Until it happened, I don't think, at least in my memory, I cannot recall ever having doubted God from the standpoint of what He was doing or not doing. And I don't think I have since. But when it happened, I remember really being shaken and wondering why God wasn't doing what I thought it was obvious He ought to be doing. Many years ago, when we were still living in Kentucky, my wife was looking for a job, and she had applied several places and may have gotten an interview or I don't know, but it was a very, very dead-end process. Nothing was getting done, no progress being made on finding a job. We needed the income. And I was questioning why God would not allow her to find a job. Not from the perspective of money, but I felt like that it was discouraging to her. I hated to see her discouraged. And I knew that she had begun to sort of doubt herself and to question her capabilities and desirability as an employee and that sort of thing. And that really bothered me. And I wondered why God would allow a person to suffer that, a person who was trying to serve Him, do His will to the very high degree that she was, someone who would be a find for any company or employer, would be a fantastic worker. And I wondered, I just questioned, why is God not letting this move forward? Why is He not making this happen? It doesn't make sense. It's obvious that this should be happening. I finally did, and things went forward, and here we are, and it was fine. But that sort of thing happens, doesn't it? Where, and I'm not saying, by the way, that the fact that that had never happened to me and doesn't really happen to me, I'm not saying or holding myself out as some sort of a great example. The things that I have done that are wrong are of such a number and a depth that I could never hold myself out as any sort of a spiritual hero. I'm not saying that. But it happens sometimes that we question God. And we wonder, why is He doing that? Or why isn't He doing that? Why did He say that? Why does He allow that? Why does the Bible say that He did that? Why doesn't the Bible say that He prevented that? And I think that it's important to think about this disconnect that we have sometimes between what we think God ought to be doing or saying, and what it appears God is actually doing. We are talking today, both in Bible class, if you are here, you have seen this already, who is God? And we're getting to the heart of the issue of who and what God is. And this morning in class, we talked about 1 Timothy 1:17. And the nature of God. What is He like? And He's unique. There's only one of Him. And He is eternal. And He can't be destroyed or die. And He's not physical, but He's spiritual. And He has, we'll talk about, Lord willing, this coming Sunday morning, He has ultimate authority. So I want to move on from that and talk more about the character of God from Deuteronomy 32. So I hope that you will turn to Deuteronomy 32 and mark it, because we're going to keep coming back to it and look at some other passages as well. But we will want to come back to the sort of the home base of Deuteronomy 32. In Deuteronomy chapter 32 and verse 4, here is what Moses says. The rock. Talking about God, calling Him, using this metaphor of God being a rock. The rock, His work is perfect. Why? Because all His ways are just. Explaining that, then Moses says, He is a God of faithfulness In the positive, he's faithful, dependable. You can count on him, rely on him. But then putting it in the negative, he is without injustice. He never does anything wrong. And then further elaborating on it, righteous and upright is he. So just to put it simply, God is fair, right? Just to sort of sum that up, we would say that God is fair. Now people quibble with that. People say, oh, God's not fair, he's just, and it's semantics to me. God is fair. The point he's making is that God is fair. He says that God is just, he's without injustice, he is righteous, he always does the right thing, and he is upright. This is God, as described by Moses in Deuteronomy 32:4. Does everybody agree with that? Does everybody in the world agree that God is fair? Would everybody give a big amen to Deuteronomy 32 and verse 4? No, a lot of people would say, wait, God is unfair. I will tell you that God is unfair. And these some actual quotes and questions and issues taken from some websites that I was looking at through the week. Someone said, if God is fair, how about people who never heard about Him and His Word? Do they just go to hell? Is it fair that there are people in the world who never hear about God, they never see a Bible, do they just go to hell? Is that fair? One article was called The Strongest Argument Against God. Why is there suffering? The so-called problem of evil. If there is a God, and if He is all-powerful, and if He is all good, and if He is just, why does anybody suffer? Somebody said, hell is just plain unfair, period. It's just unfair. Somebody said, if God is fair, why are some children born poor and others rich? That being the case, is God really fair? This is something that many, many people struggle with, and it's one of the biggest challenges to genuine, solid, lasting belief. This idea that God is doing something that's unfair, or He's not doing something that would be fair, and that there's some deficiency with God. Well, Israel had those questions too. That's why we have Deuteronomy 32. And so what we're going to talk about this morning from Deuteronomy 32 is three questions. There's a difference in my ways and God's ways. Who's right? So I think it should be done this way. God does it that way. Who's right? I think that this is appropriate. God does a different thing. Who's right, me or God? Question two, there are many religious options to choose from in the world. Which one of them is right? There are lots of religious options in the world, right here in Carteret County, right here in our little neighborhood. There are lots of options. If you just go around the corner, right here away from our building, there's another option of a way to view and worship God that is a 180 from what we do and believe and teach here. It's not even close. So if you come here and you're not digging this and it's not working for you and you think it's all wrong, just go around the corner, man, they're totally different, totally opposite from what we think around here. Which one's right? God punishes people for what they do. How is that right? God makes people suffer. God inflicts punishment. God inflicts pain. This big, all-powerful, can do anything He wants to do God takes little puny people and makes them hurt. How in the world is that right? How is that fair? Now, as you look at those questions, you might be thinking to yourself, man, I know somebody I wish was here. I know somebody who needs this. I know somebody who doesn't believe in God, or I know somebody who is an atheist, or I know somebody that they don't believe in God. Boy, do I wish they were here. Well, I just want to tell you that the lesson this morning and the questions we're talking about is not non-believers. This is not for non-Christians. I'm not going to ask you to look around because that's always a little weird. Right? You ever have that? You ever have somebody stand up and go, "Everybody, turn to the person next to you." That just makes you want to get, "Oh man, no, I don't want to do that." As we sing, let's all turn and look at each other. I'm going to go to the bathroom. In 3.5 minutes, I'll be back. That's always weird. So I'm not going to ask you to do that. I've done the looking around for you. I can do it. I can stand up here and look around. Nobody cares. And so I'll just go ahead and tell you that if we've got any unbelievers here, they're few and far between. And if there's one thing I can't stand, it's preachers who get up and preach to people who aren't there. That drives me nuts. I grew up with that. Preachers who got up and preached to everybody in the world, none of them were there. They're preaching to every denomination, every atheist, every unbeliever in the world. And it's a bunch of believers. And that makes the believers go, "Yeah, man, we got it all right." Well, we're not going to do that today. We're going to see where we're missing it. That's more fun. Not fun. It's more helpful, I'll put it that way. And a little bit fun. So, these are the questions we're going to talk about. I mean, after all, when Moses spoke or sang, when Moses spoke Deuteronomy 32, was he talking to believers or unbelievers? When Moses spoke Deuteronomy 32, was he talking to believers or unbelievers? Moses was not trying to answer the objections of atheists in Deuteronomy 32. Who is he talking to? Believers. And he's going to address these questions to believers. And you might be thinking, "I'm a Christian. I'm a believer. I don't need that stuff addressed. I don't believe it. I don't believe it." So we're going to talk about it. These questions. Is there some value for those who are unbelievers? Could you take and see? You can. But I'm going to tell you, when we try to address this stuff with unbelievers, we're almost always going to fail. When we try to deal with this stuff with unbelievers, it's almost never going to work. They're just not ready for it. And I don't mean that in an insulting way, like, "Oh, we're better than them." I just mean they're not where they need to be to hear this stuff. Anyway, so there's a difference in my ways and God's. Who's right? There's a difference in my ways and God's. Who's right? Well, somebody might say to that, "Well, neither is right. Why does somebody always have to be right? We know better than that these days. We're an enlightened society, and what we know is everybody's equally right. What we know is your perspective, my perspective, his perspective, it's all right. And everybody gets to choose what they believe is right." That's what a lot of people are saying. So they might answer that this way. But if people are honest, I know a lot of people who would say, "I'm right and God's wrong." I know a lot of people who would say that. I know a lot of believers who would say that. I've heard them say it. Now, not in those words. No believer is going to have the guts to say, "I'm right and God's wrong." But they will read the Word and say, "You know, I don't like what God did there. I think God messed that up." What are they saying? My perspective is right, God's perspective is wrong. It's the same thing. So, what do we do with that? Well, Moses, in Deuteronomy 32 in verse 5, I want you to notice something. In verse 5, he says, he's talking about a bunch of people who did things differently than God wanted them done. I want to ask you something. Listen to Moses' description and tell me, did Moses think they were equally right? Or did Moses think they were right and God was wrong? You tell me. Verse 5. "They have acted corruptly toward Him. They are not His children because of their defect, but are a perverse and crooked generation." Now, what did Moses think? God said, "Do it that way." They did it that way. Did Moses say, "That's all the same"? Did Moses say, "Well, you know, I mean, they're kind of right. I mean, they didn't do it God's way, but I mean, I think they got it right. God got it wrong." No. Moses said, when they went a different direction from God, I mean, look at the strong language that he uses. My lands. I mean, if I got up here and started saying this to you, if I got up here and started talking about how corrupt you are, if I started calling Maria just as corrupt, John, corrupt, Aubrey, Melissa, corrupt, if I started saying that to you, if I talked about how defective you are, you got a defect. You'd get mad. If I said to you, perverse and crooked bunch of people, you might beat me up. You'd at least say something to hurt my feelings. Moses does not mince words. Moses says they did something other than what God wanted and they're dead wrong. This is what the Bible said. The Bible could not be plainer about this. Job, Ray and I were talking about the value, the practical value of Job before class at some point today. Job 40. You remember what Job had been doing? Let me take that off of there so you listen to me for a minute. You remember what Job had been doing? Job was suffering. He'd lost his possessions, he'd lost his health, and he lost the support of his wife. And would you stop hating on Job's wife? I know she said to Job, curse God and die. Would you leave her alone? She just lost all her kids too. Her husband now is unable to work, and she's in the poorhouse. And we hammer that poor woman. Give her a break. She probably came around, but give her a minute. But he lost all of those things. And so what does Job spend the rest of the time doing? Griping about God. Oh, I want God to show up and explain himself. He's not doing this right. He's getting this wrong. God's not doing this the way it should be. I don't deserve this, on and on and on. And so now God shows up in Job 40 and he says, will the fault finder contend with the Almighty? Who's the fault finder? Job. Who's the Almighty? God. God says, Job, you're really going to find fault with me? You're really going to nitpick me? You really want to criticize me? Will you really? I love that. Will you really? Yeah, anybody ever do something and you just stop and go, really? Really? You ever do that? What does that mean? That means, oh, no, you didn't. My kids are going to hate that I just did that. That's why I did it. Really? Will you really annul my judgment? Will you condemn me that you may be justified? You see what he's saying? He's saying, Job, you're trying to say that you're right and I'm wrong. These are, by the way, rhetorical questions. What does that mean? That means that they're not asked to get an answer. They're asked because the answer is known. You don't do that to God. I love Romans chapter 3 and verse 4. Let God be found true, though every man be found a liar. I want you to think about that. If every person, there are 7 billion people on the planet right now. 7 billion. I'm so old, I remember when there were 6 billion. That's how old I am. I've been alive for a whole billion people to come into the world. There are 7 billion people on the planet. If all 7 billion of those people today said, the Bible is trash, God is false, there is no God, Jesus is a myth. If all 7 billion people did that, what would it change? Not one thing. Let God be found true, though every man be found a liar, as it is written, that you, capital Y lets you know who that is, that you may be justified in your words and prevail when you are judged. Every time somebody looks at God and judges him, passes judgment on him. They may not know it, but he passed and they failed. Every single time. This is always true. God is always right. When there's a difference in my ways and God's, God is always right. Always. Now, we can deny that, and we're prone to do that. You ever step on the scale and look at the number and go, that's not right. It must be on an unlevel surface. You ever do that? I've done that. I did it this morning. You ever do that? Step on it. That can't be right. You do it especially at the doctor's office. when they put you on a scale at the doctor's office. It's funny, you know what they told me one time? I said something. I went to the doctor's office and they were going to weigh me. And I started taking everything out of my pockets. I took my glasses off, took my hearing aid out, took my wedding ring off. I said, does everybody do this? You know what the girl said to me? She said, only the men. She said, the women don't do that. She says, only the men. She said, they get down as low as they can get. I thought that was funny. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. So you go to the doctor, and there's somebody standing there with you. They put you on the scale, and the number shows up, and what do you say? Well, I don't know what that is. So a scale at home says, must be my clothes. It must be your scale. But we're prone to do that all the time. Policeman pulls you over. You're doing 65 and a 55. Well, that can't be right. I mean, he's the one with the technology and the training. Well, that can't be right, right? We completely deny wrongdoing in relationships when we know that we're wrong. Somebody calls us out on something. We go, no, that's not what happened. I didn't do that. That's not the way it went. We do it all the time. When we do it with God, God is always right, like the scale mostly, and we are always wrong. Again, this is something that I know that this is something we want to get across to unbelievers, but most of the time it's just not going to do any good. They're not in a place where they can really, really know this to be true because they don't know God. That God has no credibility with them because they don't know Him. I give several times a year, I give a speech, same speech, several times a year, about how to make your life quit being a mess and succeed in whatever you want to do. And so I give that speech. There's three points to it. I don't just stand up and say, how to get your life to stop being a mess and succeed in whatever you want, point number one. I don't do that. Why don't I do that? Because they don't know who I am. What do I have to do first? Establish credibility. I have to establish with them, I am credible to tell you this because my life was a mess for a very long time, and now it isn't. Here's what I did to fix it, and then go on with it. Right? You have to establish credibility, or they don't listen. And a lot of times we try to get unbelievers to buy our arguments, and they're not ready because they don't know God. He has no credibility to them. This is for believers, what we're talking about this morning. Well, 1 Corinthians chapter is going to give you this. You can jot it down if you want to. 1 Corinthians 2, 6 to 16. 1 Corinthians 2, 6 to 16. God is always right. The only way that we can know that is by knowing... Did I? No, I did not. The only way that we can know that is by hearing the wisdom of God, not getting there by logic. All right. So, number two, there are many religious options in the world. Which one is right? Now again, many people in our society would say what? They're all right. They're all equally valid. Right? There's one God, but many roads to Him. This is what most people believe. There are up to 18,000 gods in the world. Little g. There are up to 18,000 gods in the world that people worship. Some people say over 330 million. Hinduism supposedly has over 330 million. Whatever. We'll go with 18,000. So there's 18,000 gods in the world. What do Christians say? What do Christians say? Ours is the right one. Now, what do you think about this from an unbeliever's perspective? There's 18,000 gods in the world, and Rhiannon the Christian says, I serve the right one. I've got the right one. There are up to 10,000 different religions in the world. Up to 10,000 different religions in the world. And then Bill comes along. Bill is a Christian, and Bill says what? Mine's the right one. My one out of 10,000 is the right one. That's what Christians say. Right? And so no wonder the world goes, What's the world wrong with you people? How could you possibly believe such a thing? Which one is right? Well, we need to understand that it really is, that the path to salvation, that the truth truly is a narrow way. It really is. The Bible says there's only one true God. Right? Those of you in Bible class, you know this now because you memorized it. There's only one true God. We know from John 14 and verse 6 that there is only one way to get to that God. There's only one path. What did Jesus say? I am what? The way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. There's only one group of people who are really in a relationship with Him. Only one. That's what the Bible says. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 4. The seven ones. Paul says what? There is one body. What is the body in Ephesians? The church. There's only one group of people in the entire world who's right with God. Only one. There's just one. You and I, as believers, must hold these truths with complete confidence and never compromise them. Do Christians ever compromise this? Do Christians ever compromise on this? They do. Is it possible that someday you and I could compromise on this? It is. How do we not do that? The way that we don't do that is by doing what we're doing on Sunday mornings here at this congregation, which is going back to foundational truth and repeating it and reminding ourselves of it over and over and over again. Peter said twice, it's funny, he said in chapter 1, I'm going to remind you, and then he said in chapter 3, I'm going to remind you that I'm reminding you. But Peter said, I don't mind telling you the same thing over and over again, because that's how you're sure to hang on to it and never let it go. If you hear me get up here and tell you the same thing over and over again, know that I'm doing the right thing. If I ever get up here and tell you something you've never heard before, make me stop. The only way to know that you are in truth is to repeat it over and over and over again. Finally, God punishes people. How is that right? He says in Deuteronomy 32, I mean, think about this just for a minute from an unbeliever's perspective and see if you can't see where they're coming from. Just think about this. Deuteronomy 32, 41, God says, if I sharpen my flashing sword and my hand takes hold on justice, I will render vengeance on my adversaries and repay those who hate me. I will make my arrows drunk with blood, and my sword will devour flesh with the blood of the slain and the captives from the long-haired leaders of the enemy. I wish we had time to just stop and talk about them long-haired leaders. I think that's funny, but we have to move on. But think about that. Do you see why it's almost impossible to deal with these sorts of issues with unbelievers? They're just not ready to get... They're not. When they hear stuff like that, there's just a wall. And there's got to be something there before it can ever start to come down. We're talking about Christians. How do we see this as believers? This is a very challenging concept, to think that God engaged in horrific, catastrophic, anguish-inducing punishments on earth. Read the book of Lamentations. Sometimes, God, do you know that there are almost 30 crimes in the Old Testament that call for the death penalty? Almost 30 crimes in the Old Testament. How many times did God say to His people, go in and exterminate those people? Men, women, children, infants, and animals. And then there's eternal punishment. God creating a place of the worst kind of torment that people will be confined to for eternity. That's what the Bible teaches. This is so challenging to accept. It goes against what we believe, not what we believe, it goes against what we tend to think and want. So much, many Christians have given it up altogether. There are many Christians who now will deny what we're talking about here because it's so uncomfortable and so unpopular. What do we do with that? Well, there's two things. You can try to resolve it by logic. You can try to puzzle it out in your mind and find a logical conclusion. You never will. Or you can accept it by faith. So many times, when I'm talking to people about their spiritual challenges and struggles, and they're working through something, and they're trying to figure out how something can be true, or how God could have done something, the answer at the end of the conversation is, you can't understand this logically. You have to accept it by faith. This is what Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. Note, listen carefully. This is, he's talking here specifically about the gospel, but listen to the principle that he gives. Since the world, through its wisdom, did not come to know God, God, through the message preached, was pleased to save who? Those who what? Those who believe. I want you to notice the difference in those two. The world tried to figure it out logic. Let me puzzle that out. Here's what I know. Now let me work that out like a math problem and get an answer at the bottom that suits me. And it never happened. And then God came along and He said, listen, here's the way it is. Take it or leave it. Here's the way it is. Believe it or don't. And that's how we accept the things we don't understand. And there will be a million of them. I've been in the church my entire life. You know what I mean by that. I was raised in church. I've been a Christian for over 40 years. I've been preaching for over 35 or so years. All of that. And do you know that there are still passages in the Bible that I read and say, I just don't get that. I don't understand that. I don't know how that works. It says that there and that there. Those two don't go together. I don't know what to do with that. What do I do with that? To accept it by faith. It's all you can do. Because you can't puzzle it out. It's impossible. So, next week, Lord willing, we will talk about John 1, 17 as we continue our study of foundations of our faith. We're going to talk about, for the class and the sermon, what is truth. Right? So hopefully you have your memory verses. If you don't, we've got them in the back. You can pick them up. Tonight, Lord willing, we're going to be talking about Song of Solomon. We have two more lessons from the Song of Solomon. This says sermon. This is sort of a... This would be much better, I think, as a class, and so we're going to do it as a Bible class rather than a sermon. So tonight, a Bible class on Song of Solomon 2, 3 to 6. That'll be tonight here at 6 o'clock. And so go ahead and take out your songbook and turn to the Song of Invitation. We're going to sing that in just a moment. Here's what we have seen today. Here is what, as a believer, you must accept. As a believer, this is what you have to believe. That there's a difference in the way that I do it and the way, or what would do it, and the way God does it, but God is always right. There are many religious options in the world. About 18,000. But there's only one true God. God punishes people both here and in eternity. But He's always right when He does it. He's always just in His punishment. These things make it difficult to be a believer. Because some of these things go against the way we want it to be. Some of these things go against the way we would prefer. And that makes it very difficult. We want to resist or argue or rebel. We want to find a way to read the Bible that comes out differently than what it plainly says. It's hard because this is different from what we believe. It's also hard because it's so against our culture. I find it very stressful to be an American. I find it really hard to be an American in 2024. Because so much about our culture is totally different from that right there. So much about our culture is a 180 from what we have just talked about and shown from Scripture. It's a constant fight with those around us. It's stressful. It's exhausting. It leads to disagreements, conflicts, arguments, sometimes even between friends or among families. It's hard to be a believer, but this is what it means. Compromise is attractive. Compromise on these sorts of things is attractive, but it's also deadly. And when we compromise the plain truth of God, we no longer have God, but are like the Galatians. Paul said, "I'm amazed that you're so quickly deserting Him who called you for a different gospel," which is what? It's really not another, because there's only one. So this morning, if you're not a believer, maybe this stuff just sounds wacky. Maybe this is like, we'd love a chance to talk to you and study with you and show you why these are the things that we believe. If you're not a Christian and you're moving that direction, you're thinking about it, maybe you've decided to do it, you've got some obstacles, we'd love to study with you. Maybe you're ready. We have water, we have garments, we're ready to baptize you if you're ready this morning. If you are a Christian and you're struggling with some of these things or with some other things, that's okay. That's all right. There's nothing wrong with that. We're all struggling with something. And if you're struggling with something, we would love the opportunity to help you firm that up and make it better through Bible study and prayer and fellowship. So if we can help you this morning with some spiritual struggle, have your songbook out, have it ready to sing, and we're going to sing that song. As we're doing that, if you decide that there's some way that we can help you, make the decision. Don't put it off. You have any idea how many people over the years have said to me, like they finally have come forward and have said, "I've been putting this off for months, years." You know how many people have come to me for help and said, "I have thought about calling you 1,000 times and never did." You know how many times people have said that? Can I ask you a question? If you're putting something off, why? Would you tell me why? Would you tell me what benefit you're gaining from putting it off? What's the payoff? What's the benefit? And God forbid, if you're driving home today and something happens and you don't make it, what then? Where did putting it off get you then? So if you're putting it off, let me encourage you to make the decision to stop putting it off. If you'd like to, we can talk privately after church, or you can come forward and take a seat on the front as we stand and sing together.